you know, really the best leaders, in addition kind of to listening, which is really foundational in the communication, is that as they're giving directions to the individual, they really tell you what has to be accomplished, and they add the element of the why, right? Tell them how the work that they do really does affect the organization, and how their levels of importance. If they can articulate that to you, then you've done a really good job as a leader. And then get out of the way.
Welcome to the Introspective Leader Podcast, where Rachel and I take a deep dive into the ideas and practices that will help you become a more effective and respected organizational leader. I am Stuart, and as a retired Army Senior Non-Commissioned Officer, a former hospital executive, and a management instructor, I have been leading and managing for almost 30 years and teaching it for over 15. Rachel is an Army officer and a healthcare practitioner, and while she is relatively new to the gig, she is one of the most talented young leaders I have come across. So thank you for joining us, and we will see you on the other side. Hey you, before we get back to the show, just a quick reminder. If you're enjoying it, give us that 5-star review and share it with at least one other person who you think will also enjoy it. That's it. Back to the show. Today, we welcome Dr. Kevin Gazzara to our show. Dr. Gazzara is the CEO of Magna Leadership Solutions, a management leadership professor, and one of the authors of The Leader of Oz. His previous work includes 18 years at Intel Corporation in areas ranging from program and product management to operations management to general management and finally to leadership development, where he was directly involved in the development of 40,000 company stakeholders. Dr. Gazzara holds a Bachelor of Science in Commerce and Engineering, a Master of Business Administration, and a Doctorate of Management in Organizational Leadership. And with that, Dr. Gazzara, welcome to the Introspective Leader Podcast, where, as we like to say, the complexities of leadership are met with an equal complexity of thought.
Well, Stuart, it's great to be here, and I'm hoping to give your listeners some things of incredible value to help to make them great managers and great leaders.
We're very excited to have you here, and I have no doubt that you will. Now, what I want to get at right out of the gate, what I like about your particular leadership development organization is that your focus is on creating an integrated learning system that is designed and delivered in a way to meet the specific needs of each organization and even each individual within that organization. In other words, as it is stated on your website, you don't do training. Instead, participants learn through working on actual real-life problems specific to their organization and specific to each individual's role. Kevin, does that sound like an accurate summary of what your company is about? And of course, feel free to correct me and expound as needed.
Well, Stuart, I think that is a great summary. And I really want to start by thanking you for taking the time for the research and the thought that you've done, right? I don't really see this from every interviewer for the podcast that I do. I do probably one of these once a month, and I want to thank you for starting there, because I think it makes my job a whole lot easier.
Well, you're welcome, but of course. And I will say, I was very intrigued by your website. I spent a good couple hours going through the options that you bring out. And of course, we'll get into it in a minute, the Magna model and the four areas that you guys concentrate on that within that model. But again, you're welcome. But I actually really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it.
Good. Well, thanks. We tried to make it easy to understand, show that we have a kind of enough meat behind our models, and at the same time, get people to understand the value of them and how to implement them. And hopefully you'll be able to go through a lot of that, because I think listening and hearing the author or the people that created it is probably a whole lot more beneficial than just trying to read through tons and tons of data that you would find on a website. So we started Magna Leadership Solutions back in 2007. I had spent 30 years of my life in big corporate America, the last 18 years at Intel. And as you had mentioned, you know, my last 10 years at Intel, I spent helping manage Intel's management leadership development for the world for their what they called the residential programs for first and midline managers. You know, and when I had left, we had just finished training our 40,000th manager. I can't say that I trained all 40,000 of them, but I did get involved with kind of developing the programs for them. And it was quite an accomplishment. And, you know, being able to see the development of the different managers and how that helped the organization grow and learn was important to me. So when I was just a little after I turned 50, I was able to retire and take two of my colleagues from Intel. And what we really wanted to do was we wanted to offer kind of, you know, 100,000 person organizational kind of training where, you know, they have tens of millions of dollars to pump into it and really offer that to small to medium sized organizations and make a difference. And that's what we've been doing for the last 15 years. So our goal is help the small to medium sized organizations kind of discover that leadership development is not an event. You know, it's really a continuous process. I can't tell you how many calls that we get of, you know, we have a leadership problem and, you know, we've got a 4-hour session block that we can do in our next meeting. Can you come in and fix us? And the answer is no, we can't do that. Right. So it's, you know, leadership development's not an event. It's a continuous process. And the good news is starting the process is really relatively easy. Many organizations really spend too much time in analysis paralysis, and they just never get started. So pick a model that works for you and get started. You really want to pick a system and not a training class. You know, one of the things we don't do is we don't do training, right? The training, I think, is, you know, when people think of training, it's taking me away from doing the real work. What we do is development, which is all about bringing the real challenges, giving you the right tools, and you solving them with an expert and collectively with your colleagues. You know, quite often you have in any organization, you have the knowledge necessary. We have to help you figure out a system so that you can make the knowledge work together and get the people to work together, which I think is the biggest challenge.
All the research points to that the way humans learn is doing exactly what you were talking about, working on an actual real problem, right? Because yes. then we devote ourselves to it. Our brain automatically locks in, and then we're more open to bringing out outside information from experts like yourself to help us solve that problem. Correct?
Yes. Yeah. And you triggered something that I didn't have in my notes. Yet I think it'll be really important for the audiences. You know, many years ago, I had read a book called Brain Rules by John Medina. And John's a neuroscientist. And if you haven't read Brain Rules, I highly recommend it because it was really life-changing for us. And there are lots and lots of tips in there. And we've essentially just remodeled all of our leadership system around what John talks about from a neurological perspective. There's a couple key areas that I'll just mention, not to kind of steal the thunder from what John did in his book. One of the things is that you want to give the person the first opportunity to kind of fail at what they're doing, right? It's kind of fail forward fast, do it in a safe kind of way where you get to try out problem solving of what you're doing. And most of the time people have come in with that already, right? Because they're stuck. And that's usually the reason they want to bring in a consultant because, you know, whatever they've been doing just isn't working. So John says is give the people the opportunity to kind of fail at that momentarily, or maybe they've been doing that already. Then give them a tool, one that has been proven that you can demonstrate in a way that's memorable, and then allow them to, in a safe environment, a practice environment, to try it out. And once you try it out, one, you're going to learn whether it works. And two, if there's any questions, you want the questions to come up then. And then the third piece is after you leave that event or that part of the process, which is usually a workshop, then because you've tried it, you've figured out what works, what doesn't. If you did fail in a safe manner, then you have experts there to help you work through it. And then you have that degree of confidence to be able to go back and apply it back in the organization. And if you can do that and replicate that over and over and over again, and John says you pretty much have to do this and by changing up how people are learning about every 10 to 15 minutes. Then the stuff will, one, will stick. And to be honest with you, it's just a whole lot more fun that way.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit here from talking about sort of what you do to actually asking you a question for what you do, your expertise, and sort of get your, and this is actually something that's personal for me. And also a lot of the more junior managers that have reached out to me through the years is that when you're dealing with a new manager, has never been a manager before, who has spent their entire career up to that point working in line and staff position, they now become a manager. What are some of your suggestions in helping them to make that corresponding shift in mindset that is needed to function now effectively as a manager and as a leader?
Well, I think it's really pretty simple. I think, first of all, you have to put people in those positions that truly have the ability to be successful as a manager and a leader.
Amen.
There are lots and lots of people that are exceptional at what they do. Many of them are not focused around leadership or management or whatever, and they just see that as a way for escalation, both through title and more likely through advancement in salary. And they just, you know, have need to do something different. And what we found is that you truly have to want to be a good manager and leader. And we've done a bunch of research with one of my colleagues, Dr. Ali Lakhani. He and I wrote the book, The Leader of Oz, which we talk about all of our different concepts. They're all academically grounded. Ali was a software manager at Intel when I was managing leadership development. And then he actually recruited me to come and be his mentor for his doctoral dissertation. So I got to work with him for many, many years. And he did some amazing research around statistically verifying kind of what really makes a difference, you know, for people to be recognized as a great manager. And it's really simple. And he's done this. He's actually done a correlation. He has the only correlated leadership assessment tool. It's called Caliber. And he's tested on over 1,000 managers. And we found a really interesting pattern. And the pattern was that the better you get at communication, by the way, he's actually mapped this to 70 different countries. And it really doesn't matter what country you are in, is the better you get at communication, the better you are evaluated as a manager and a leader. So if you're a great communicator, you're going to get higher scores to start. The key is that the communication has to have two things. It has to have two elements. It has to have frequency and has to have clarity in it, right? The more is always better in communication. There's very rarely we ever go and do an organizational analysis and ask the people, you know, about communication, that any of the employees come back to us and say, you know, damn, I wish that our managers would stop communicating so much to us. That doesn't happen. So, and it's the frequency of communication, not the intensity, you know. So rather than, we always go in and tell our senior management, rather than doing that 1 or 2 hour meeting that you do at the end of each month or at the end of each quarter and just try to overload people, is do a bunch of really short bursts of communication. That frequency is going to be so important to them, because one, it shows your interest, and it will raise elements that you need to address before they become catastrophic elements. So I think if I had to give any tips to the listeners, is if you do nothing else, but just get better at adding that frequency of communication, those touch points, and truly listening to people, right? It's we're not talking about a monologue, a one-way type of thing. We're talking about actually listening, right? You know, they teach you kind of in coaching school. I do a lot of executive coaching and so forth, is you want to have that 80-20 thing happening, which means I need to be talking 20% of the time and listening 80% of the time. And if I can do that, then I know that I'm going to get better input from the individuals. And our tendency is to do the reverse, not because we're doing it maliciously. We're doing it because we have lots of knowledge and we want to share and help, particularly those of us that are our teacher types or instructor types or professor types, whatever you want to call us. Our goal is to do that. And yet at the same point in time, we know that if I can listen more and talk less, I'm going to get a better result.
Yeah, I liked all of that. I'm really glad you added there at the end about the listening. And what I have said, and feel free to add on or correct or modify as you will, what I have said to managers, of course, listening is important, and there's thousands and thousands of hours and trillions of dollars spent on trying to get people to be better listeners, right? In every phase of their life. What I have found as a manager, the key, especially when you're listening to those that report to you, is listening, and while you're listening, assuming positive intent. What I have noticed sometimes is so many new managers, they get in that position, they have that authority. Again, I think you really nailed it, Kevin. So many of them get in there because they were top performers in their technical field, if you would. Yep. So as we both know, totally different skills than what it takes to be an effective manager or effective leader. But then they often get in there. What I find is they're not assuming positive intent or listening with a true intent to understand the perspective of the other person. I always say, just because you're trying to understand it doesn't mean you have to ultimately agree with it. You're just trying to see where they come from. It's just another form of a root cause analysis. When you're listening to someone and you're listening with a true intention to understand the perspective, it's just sort of a soft skilled root cause analysis. What do you think on that, Kevin?
Well, I think you're right on the money that you have to be truly listening so that you be able to kind of summarize what the other person has said, as opposed to what many people come in and they listen with the intent of responding, right?
Yes.
And one of the things that we teach, and you know, we have a whole suite of programs that we teach in our Leading Forward Academy. You know, one of the foundational elements is called communicating and coaching with purpose, right? And one of the things that we tell people, like when you're really doing great effective listening, you know, there's a couple things that are happening. First of all, there's really an easy way to tell whether you're effectively listening or not is if you're formulating a response to the individual, you've stopped listening. You know, our brains are serial processors, right? A lot of times you really can't multitask. We think of everything.
Thank you. Kevin, for saying that. I've been howling that in the wind for years, man.
Yeah.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I was at Intel, Andy Grove, who was the CEO, wonderful man, brilliant guy, both business and technical. You know, and I come out of the technical world being a recovering engineer, kind of coming over into the soft side here, is that, you know, Andy always kind of focused around, you know, for making sure that you're listening with good intent, right? And that you're also listening in a way that you're part of the solution and not part of the problem, right? That you can work that way. The other thing that I found, Stuart, is that, you know, really the best leaders, in addition kind of to listening, which is really foundational in the communication, is that as they're giving directions to the individual, they really tell you what has to be accomplished, and they add the element of the why, right? If anybody's read any Simon Sinek's work around, you know, start with why, they tell you that. And what they do is they leave the how up to the employee. Right. And this is not to be confused with training, right? I mean, showing people how to do things is fine. Showing them over and over and over again every time you're asking them is really a gigantic mistake, right? So leaders is, you know, tell them what has to be done, quantity, quality, and pace. Give them the reasoning, you know, and it's not to make more money or whatever. Tell them how the work that they do really does affect the organization and how their levels of importance. If they can articulate that to you, then you've done a really good job as a leader. And then get out of the way. And if they want to do it, you know, ABC versus CBA, it doesn't matter. You need to hold them accountable for the deliverable, the action, not the activity. And I think too many leaders really measure individuals by the activity that they work. You know, how many hours did you put in, and what does the percentage are of completion? What they really should do is you really need to hold people accountable for the deliverables. And the problem is that most leaders don't do a good job on the quantity, quality, and pace of setting up the deliverables and the milestones. And, you know, you get to the end of the quarter and you deliver something and then they go, it's not quite really what I wanted, or I was thought you should have done this. Or, and, you know, one of the best things about leadership is, you know, from a servant leadership model, one of our foundations is you always want to start with, I'm the problem or I'm contributing to the problem.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
That's the mindset. Doesn't mean you have to stay there. The difference is if you start there, solutions are many. And when you start with the other person as the problem, solutions are few.
Yes, yes. So moving on here, it's actually going back to something you said when talking about the very first thing you said. It's related to this. The very first thing you said to when I was talking to you about how do you help adjust the mindset of a new manager? You start with something I say so often about anything that has to do with an organization and its people. You started right off with, first, hire the right people. Have the right things that you're looking for that will help you hire the right people, right? The right people don't just magically appear. They are the outcomes of what you're looking for. If you're looking for the wrong things, you're going to often get the wrong people. So I want to hear a little bit more, just as employee selection in general, hiring in general, some of your insight on that. Because as we know, many, many, many organizations, many managers and many leaders struggle with that. Even seasoned managers and leaders that are good at so many other things. But it is something I have seen so many people struggle with. So I wanted to get your input on that, Kevin.
Yeah, well, simply put, Stuart, that you want to hire for talent and train for skill, right? Yeah. You want to hire people, you know, there's a line that I like in one of the little videos that I've seen, which is, you know, if the goal is to climb a tree, would you rather hire a squirrel or train a horse? Right. and that's always kind of stuck with me. And the key is find that talent where people are naturally wired and then take the opportunity to train them for skill. I mean, if you look at employees that we let go or in organizations let go, it's not usually for lack of knowledge. Right. It's usually for that they're not playing well with others. Right. This yes. is and it's usually due to behavioral differences. With the and kind of misaligned values of the individual's values and the organizational's values of what's important to them and not. And, you know, the good news is, you know, we've been very successful at helping many companies what we call benchmark their positions, right? And we use a whole suite of statistically validated EEOC approved assessments to hire people so that they're the best fit for the organization. And I think too often, one of the things that they trained us, I got certified and taught at Intel, was to do behavioral interviewing. Awesome technique for interviewing. Yes. The thing is that, you know, when people practice it, they get really, really good, and you don't really find out what's kind of behind the curtain until after they're hired and lots of things are going wrong. So the key is there's lots of assessments out there. We use a suite of assessments from Target Training International, TTI, and we've used them for over 20 years. And we couple that with kind of discussions around skills. The thing is if you can find people that are going to have behaviors that fit, if you're going to find people that have their values are aligned, you know, things that really get them excited, you're going to increase, put that in an environment that works for them, and you can place them in a job that aligns with the different task types that they like to do. That was one of the foundations that I did for my doctoral dissertation. I wanted to find out, is there a relationship with the balance of, there's three types of tasks that we do. We do routine tasks, we do troubleshooting tasks, and we do project tasks. Yes. And if you look at that, there's 496 discrete mixtures of those. If I can identify your discrete mixture, then I know that I can raise your level of job satisfaction, engagement, right, and contribution to the organization. And I think at the end, I'm going to be able to give a tool out to the listeners that stay on of how they can do the assessment on it. And I'm going to give you a free link so nobody has to pay for it. So hopefully that'll keep the listeners on for at least another couple minutes.
Thank you. And thank you for that, Kevin. We all like little freebies, don't we? And this is something that I think would be great. And I'm eager to get on and look at it. I am going to move on to what is my last question. And then, of course, we'll open it up for you to add anything you would like to add in before we go. But this is one I like to ask a lot of our guests that we have on. I'd like for you to just name one area, skill, trait, attribute, what have you, however you want to label it, that you've consistently struggled with through your career and how you've sort of addressed that struggle.
Yeah, so it's really easy when I thought about this question. I mean, there was like no close first or second. There was only one element, and it's prioritization. You know, I have what my wife would call kind of a conflicted brain. You know, both the left and the right side are constantly charged. You know, I'm a creative person. I like the techie, the analytic stuff. I like the creative stuff. You know, I'm a musician. You know, I am a teacher. I am an engineer. I'm a business development person. You know, all of that is incredibly exciting to me. So the thing I struggle with is really prioritization, is that I always believe, and my brain has always believed, that there is more time than there actually is. So I have to get focused. And if you think about, I think Stephen Covey made it's really the Eisenhower chart about important and urgent, right? If you can really get the things that are important, stay focused there as opposed to things that are unimportant but urgent, which is where we spend most of our time. Yeah. If you can really do that and you can structure your day in such a way that you have that ability, things get better. So I'll give you my best two tips on doing that. The first thing is go get a coach or go get a person to work with, a colleague, a friend, a family member. Usually it doesn't happen with significant others or spouses, and get them to hold you accountable and you hold them accountable. And to establish, if you listen to any of the work by Marshall Goldsmith, Marshall writes lots of fantastic stuff. I think I just finished his last book called The Learned Life. That was great. It's called The Earned Life. I think that's the official
I've
title.
I've actually heard of that one, actually. Okay, The Earned Life.
And then the previous one I had read that was also very, very good, you know, is What Got You Here Won't Get You There, right? And Marshall really focuses around prioritization, figure out what's important, and getting people to help you, getting people to hold you accountable. I know if you give me 20 hours to do something, I'll take all 20 hours. If I have to do it in 10 hours, and you give somebody that will partner with me, right? We in our system, you know, we have the different workshops that we do. We have what we call capability partners rather than accountability, because that accountability sounds too much like policing, and that's not the case. Is a capability partner pulls you out. Pulls the best out of you and holds you accountable. And if you can get an individual to do that, it's really a win-win. And I will tell you, whenever I start a new coaching session or a partnering session with other people, the number one problem is we are always too optimistic, right? That is the number one thing, that we always think about that we can do more than we can. At the end of the day, we're always disappointed. So really, in fact, I wrote an article, if you talk about pessimism, optimism, and realism, or if you just search for that, I published it on medium.com. And the importance of having realism in there, it doesn't mean you can't have stretch goals, but I think most of us have this optimistic perspective. And, you know, not accomplishing everything that you've set out to do for the day on a consistent basis is not a motivator. So you want to be realistic, and you also want to make sure that it's not just tasks that you're measuring yourself on. It can be on relationships as well. You know, have I spent enough time to develop that additional relationship with my spouse or my kids or whatever. So don't discount those pieces. If it's only about kind of the checkoff types of things, long term you're going to be disappointed. So for prioritization, get a coach. And then the second thing is each morning or the night before, whatever works for you, is map it out, right? And one of the things that I learned at Intel when we put breakthrough systems in place was is that you have to have blocks of time for what we used to call KTBR, keeping the business running, right? And I think that's the number one problem that I see with anyone that I coach, is that they don't have an idea of what it takes to keep the business running. And they think of all project work, right? So I have 8 hours tomorrow, right? So I'm going to do 3 hours of this and 4 hours of that and 1 hour on this. And at the end of the day, you know, they've got none of it done, or they've gotten, you know, 30 minutes of it done. The problem is they haven't done is they haven't they haven't allocated time and blocked out time for the KTBR, keeping the business running. There's just stuff that you got to do, right? You have to take the phone calls. You have to do promotional type of things and do podcasts. You have to do editing, right? Is you need to get a handle on that first. And if you can get a handle on that first, then you can say, now that I've looked about that, and the best way to do this is really kind of track your tasks for a week or two to give you an idea where all your time is going. What you'll recognize is that 40 or 50 hour a week, whatever it is, you might have 5 hours or 7 hours of a really additional time beyond what you have to do that you can do the work. Now, there's one of two things that you can do. First thing you can do is you can get a partner, or you can delegate it, right? Delegate all other stuff so you can free up more time. That's the first thing you can do. Or the second thing you can do is you can become realistic. And now I can't think of that 50-hour week anymore. I've got 7 hours. And in those 7 hours, what's the amazing long-term stuff that I can do? And if you start thinking that way, one, it's better for your mental health. And two, it's going to make you realize there's a lot of crap that you do that you really, you know, if you're making X dollars per hour, that you should get somebody that makes a little bit less than whatever you're making.
Yeah, we just released 2 episodes on delegation. Again, something I'm very much an apostle on. I won't get going down that rabbit hole, because I start talking about delegation and how it's related to employee development overall. I just won't stop. But yes, you're right. To me, first, of course, be realistic. Be realistic along there. But yeah, the first thing you could look at, what is it that you can give to someone else that will get that off your plate, but just as importantly, add value to them and give them something that builds up their skill set or makes their day more rich, if you would. I'm constantly looking for things that seem to fit best with the type of employees that I have, and what could I give to them or pass on to them that's going to enrich them, or something that just really jives with who they are and what they do.
Yeah. And I would say if anybody has read the book Flow, F-L-O-W,
yes.
Right, by Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. He, fortunately, he was one of my advisors for my doctoral work. So my work was focused around, you know, task types and, you know, getting people in flow. What you just described is if I can keep the things that are in flow for me and delegate the things that are in flow for someone else, you get this incredible win-win type of environment. The problem is we tend to hold on to the stuff that we're good at, and it doesn't get us in flow. It gets us that check off of hey, we got this done. The thing is we've done it 1,000 times. And what you need to do is the best leaders develop other leaders. And that's the way to do it, is to delegate it to someone that will build, they'll help build them, and it'll free you up for more of the strategic work.
For sure. And I will say this last part, you really nailed it. When we were doing the episode on delegation, one of the common reasons managers give is, well, I'm good at it. I can get it done. I can do it better. Mm-hmm. Or I enjoy doing it to an extent. And my answer to that, especially the ones that I enjoy doing it, is unless it is something you should be doing at your level and that requires you to do it at your level, enjoy doing it and being good at it. Those are never an excuse. That's basta. That's the end of the discussion on that. Those are the worst excuse you can come by. Back when you start talking to me about, well, I'm afraid of the outcomes because this is high visibility, I can have some sympathy for you, right? We get it. These are real world consequences. But when you talk about you just want to do it because you enjoy doing it, well, you know, you just need to get over that and move on.
Well, I'll give you one magic question that your listeners can ask about making a decision of whether you should keep something or not, if you truly want to be a leader. And this is one of the things that we teach as part of our program, is that if you have a task that you're holding on to that you could give to someone else that would develop them, then you absolutely have to delegate it.
Oh, yes. Beautifully stated. Love that. Love that. Yes. If you've got a task that you're doing, but that would enrich someone else and develop them, you've got to pass that on to them. Again, delegation isn't doling out, as the first-time manager puts it, the book First-Time Manager. It is preparing them for it, getting them at the skill level. But yes, anything that will help develop an employee that you're doing, you need to go through the delegation process to make sure you can hand it over to them. Well, Kevin, hey, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I want to end it with my formal questions here. Do you have anything you want to add on before we sign off and let you go back? But I do want to say before I turn it over to you, every single book you mentioned, every link you brought up, I have been studiously writing it down in my little notebook here, and they will be in our episode description section. Even that article that you mentioned, Pessimism, Optimism, and Realism, we'll get a link to that too.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think the only thing I'll give you, because I know that we've gone long here, is my promise to you is to give you the gift, yes. Right? Is I've created a link for your listeners here, https://. Right. So it's a secure site. Gotcha. And it's a shortened version. So hopefully everybody can remember this. It's magnaleader.co, /, and this has to be in caps, GIFT, gift. And if they go there, that will take them to the TTI site, and they will be able to answer a series of 15 questions, and it will send them back their one-page report on what an ideal task mixture to keep them the most motivated and engaged is. And they'll get it within, 60 seconds. And if there's additional questions on it, you can feel free to reach out to me at kevin@magnaleadership.com. And if not, I hope to really use this to restructure your life in a way that's not only beneficial for you, but most importantly, as a leader, beneficial for the people that you manage or that you relate to.
Awesome. Thanks, Kevin. We really appreciate that. And I'm sure our viewers will find that useful. I'm actually going to go access it myself as soon as I get a chance. Hey, I've really enjoyed this very much, Kevin. I wish you would have got to meet Rachel. She's the smarter one, I call her. but I am glad we had an opportunity to this, and I very much enjoyed it and really got a lot out of your expertise.
Well, thanks for the format. I enjoyed the banter back and forth and having it more conversational, hopefully as of benefit to your listeners rather than just kind of me just spewing things on in two monologues.
Yeah. If they're listening to us, then they're used to banter and discussion and interruptions. That's sort of how we do business here. But I really appreciate it, Kevin. I know we got a lot out of it, and I will make sure I get all these links in the episode description. And again, folks out there, make sure you go check out Kevin's website and check out his company, Magna Leadership Solutions. And I have ordered The Leader of Oz. He is a co-author of that book. So again, going to have all those links. And please, when you get an opportunity, check all that out. Kevin, thank you very much. And you have a great rest of your day.
All right, Stuart. Thank you so much.